argument in State versus Cole, docket number 48645. We are conducting this hearing via Zoom. Appearing on behalf of the appellant, Casey Cole, is Ryan Holdaway. And on behalf of the respondent, State of Idaho, is Andrew Wake. Mr. Holdaway, you may present your opening argument.
All right. Thank you. Ryan Holdaway for the defendant appellant. If it may please the court, I've requested to have 10 minutes set for rebuttal. I believe the clock's been set for that. Hopefully, I don't intend to take up all of that. I just had requested oral arguments really to kind of try to zero in on a couple of the points that we had made in the briefing that I was just wanting to ensure had been made clear what our position was and what we were asking the court to do. And the main reason for that is because one of the cases that's cited to delineates in the opinion of that case that the use of overhead lights constitutes a de facto detention of a motorist. And I think that sometimes can get a little bit of some bristling from the state in the sense that the Fourth Amendment law that's come down consistently from the Supreme Court is to reject any kind of bright line rule and instead require a totality of the circumstances standard. And so the fact that there's been reliance on that case, I don't want to be taken as an invitation on our part to try to suggest that we're asking the court to adopt a bright line rule or to perpetuate one to the extent that it existed, but rather to place that finding and similar findings to it in the context of the totality of the circumstances standard that is typically applied in these kinds of cases. So that's the first part that we'll try to make sure we clarify and explain how we're asking the court to approach that. The second one is that there was some discussion as to the first search and second search. There hasn't been much said about that from our position, because from our position, if the initial detention became unconstitutional, everything that flows from that initial unconstitutional detention is suppressible. There's, other than the fact that the searches took place at two separate times, there's nothing that distinguishes them as far as what the grounds are for those searches. Ultimately, the first search is the primary one anyway. But turning to that first issue, the one of the de facto versus totality of the circumstances. In this particular case, what we've got here and what happened in the other case, I want to say the Rourke case, is that the use of the overhead lights by virtue of a couple of different Idaho statutes creates an absolute obligation on the individual that is observing those lights and seeing those lights to yield the right of way and or stop and remain stopped until either the emergency vehicle has passed or they've been otherwise directed that they can disregard those emergency lights. Now, the reason we are not arguing that that should constitute a de facto detention in every single circumstance is because the statute itself acknowledges that there can be some circumstances where a motorist does not have to stop or remain stopped, such as if they're given direction by an officer. So if I'm coming up to an intersection, there's an officer with overhead lights there, I don't have to pull over and stop if the officer's waving me through. So there's these circumstances that we can have where even though overhead lights are activated, a motorist can be given signals and indicia that suggest they don't have to observe those lights in the way that we would normally require, such as to pull over. So for that reason, I would agree that it's not a de facto detention in every single case. What I would suggest, and what I think this court has previously suggested in its opinions that it's put out, as well as the Idaho Supreme Court, is that the use of the overhead lights, in particular when read in conjunction with the statutes, is a very strong indicator of a show of authority. And that's where we start to, it starts to look like we're trying to create a de facto rule when we're not. If we were to look at it as scales, one scale weighing towards finding that there was a detention, one side of the scales weighing against a finding of detention. The weight that goes on the side of finding that there was a detention when we use overhead lights is very heavy because of these mandatory language that we get out of these statutes requiring a motorist to stop if they've observed those and requiring that they remain in that position until certain things have taken place.
Mr. Holdaway.
Yes.
Isn't the dispositive question in this case whether the whether your client was otherwise directed by the peace officer under the language of the statute?
I think that's where we get to, yes, because there's no question the lights are used. There's no question that those lights then require my client to stop and remain stopped unless otherwise directed. And that's exactly where we're getting to, is that part, because I think that's where it fails for the state.
Well, there's no question, right, that the lights were used to effectuate an appropriate traffic stop in the first instance.
That's correct. The reason it becomes an issue that we're challenging here is because the district court then says, oh, well, but there were safety reasons for the lights. So at the time the officer approached Mr. Cole and gave him his papers, at that point in time, the lights are on for safety features and they weren't a show of authority. And that's the only reason we focus on that, is because I think that analysis disregards the affirmative language of the statute, that a motorist has to be otherwise directed before they can disregard those lights, even if those lights, in the officer's mind, is being used for a safety purpose. And I think that's certainly in the case of Mr. Cole, where the lights were absolutely unquestionably initially used to effect a detention. There was no interruption of that process. There was no time where the lights went off and then came back on, suggesting that there was now a break between their original function and now a function of safety. There was nothing like that.
They just Is it your position then that had the lights been turned off, that would have been sufficient for this to convert into a consensual encounter?
I would suggest that very closely, yes. I'm hesitant because I think the language and the position of the officer would still weigh in favor of a detention, but I certainly think that massive weight that sitting on the side of finding a detention would be gone. And I think my client would be in a much, much more difficult position to argue that he didn't understand that he was free to leave, particularly where they would have been on and then turned off. I think the fact of turning them off in and of itself would signal to most motorists that the stop is coming to a conclusion or has concluded. Even just switching them from the overhead emergency lights to amber lights or other lights that the officers have on their vehicles, I think could also be indicative of that. Certainly it relieves them from the burden under the statutes.
Well, the stop hasn't concluded until the officer returns the driver's license and paperwork, right?
That's correct. So what would happen is, if let's say the officer had turned off the lights and then was walking up with the paperwork, because he still had the paperwork, Mr. Cole couldn't leave. He still had his license and things. But once he hands those back, now Mr. Cole has all of his paperwork, the lights are off. And so most of the indicia that he would point to say, I still feel detained, would be removed. Now, I would argue, I still think that if an officer is standing extremely close to a vehicle, by the sheer fact they're standing there, a reasonable motorist cannot move. And I don't think that the language the officer used really could be that clearly understood to mean that a stop is concluding. But again, if we're looking at those scales, those things may be considered to be of less significance and not enough to find that a reasonable motorist would feel they're still being detained. What happens when we add the lights to that? That becomes such a heavy indicia of a detention to any person. And then we add to that proximity to the vehicle, ambiguous language, and that weight on that side of finding detention just increases and increases and increases. I think at that point in time, there's really not much left for the state to point to suggest that in this case, a reasonable person would have understood they were free to leave.
So assuming for the sake of argument that an officer can leave the patrol lights on or the overhead lights on until the stop is concluded, meaning the license and paperwork has been returned, would this have been a consensual encounter had the officer said, you're free to go, but can I talk to you for a minute? Or do you still ascribe the same weight to those lights as you would, as you've argued?
No, absolutely not. I think if an officer comes up and uses language that I think a reasonable person would understand clearly alleviates their responsibility to remain stopped to those lights, that fits within the statute, I believe. Actually, there's two different statutes. So the first one, 625, that says except or otherwise directed by a peace officer. The second one talks about a reasonable person knew or should have known that the officer was trying to get them to stop. Language, clear language from an officer saying, this, we're done, you can leave, I believe takes care of both of those statutes, despite the fact that the overhead lights remain running. And so at that point in time, we see that in the cases that the state delineates in its briefing. We've also pointed to that as well, though, in cases where individuals, passengers and motorists, were told in rather clear terms that they could leave. And we've had situations where that's even coupled with things like officers then kind of walking away from a vehicle and coming back, things of that, like that. But ultimately, they were told, and in some cases, multiple times they were told that they could leave. And those were upheld as consensual encounters.
So circling back to my first question, then, the dispositive issue revolves around the words used by the officer.
In this case, yes, I think so. I think I get hesitant to get locked down on that only because, you know, we say, well, totality of the circumstances, we have to consider all of the factors. And I worry that if an officer says, well, you're free to go, but I'm going to stand super close to your car, is the person really free to go? And so to that extent, I think there's still a little bit that has to be looked into as far as that's concerned. But certainly, I think a motorist becomes a little bit more enabled to understand that they don't have to respond to an officer, that they don't have to remain in that line of questioning. I kind of look at what we put in the reply brief is that language coming out of the Ohio Supreme Court case. It's on page 3 of the reply brief talking about, and I'll just read the one part. It says, most people believe that they are validly in a police officer's custody as long as the officer continues to interrogate them. The police officer retains the upper hand and the accoutrements of authority. That the officer lacks legal license to continue to detain them is unknown to most citizens, and a reasonable person would not feel free to walk away as the officer continues to address him. And I think that that reasoning from that court is sound, and I think that is, in fact, how most people view it. So even in a case like this, I get hesitant to get locked down on that only because what happens is the officer comes up to the vehicle, hands the paper back, and then without any break, I mean, if they listen to the recording, he makes a statement and then immediately says, can I ask you some additional questions, and proceeds into those questions while standing in close proximity to the vehicle. And I think it still gets a little bit questionable as to whether or not Mr. Cole would have felt free, or anybody in a situation would have felt free to leave with that set of circumstances even. I'm just willing to acknowledge and admit that I think my client's position becomes more tenuous if that were the only facts left over for him to argue that he was being detained. I think it becomes much less clear at that point in time. So certainly I think the language of the officer, while I hesitate to say it's dispositive, I think it's certainly the major component of the analysis, and ultimately the primary one.
And how do you reconcile your argument with the case law that says an officer can ask for consent to search an individual's car during a traffic stop?
The state actually in its briefing points out, and we reference that as well, that, and this is from page 10 of the state's responsive brief. It's from State v. Gutierrez. I probably slaughtered the name and I apologize, but it says specifically, I'll quote, a consent to search given during an illegal detention is tainted by the illegality and is therefore ineffective. The request to for consent to search Mr. Cole's vehicle did not come until after the purpose of the detention had been completed and concluded as far as from the officer's end of it. At that point in time, the officer had no basis to continue the detention other than his curiosity.
I'm sorry, Mr. Holdaway, I'm not talking about the request for the search. I'm just talking about just the general idea that you can ask for consent to do something during an otherwise valid traffic stop, which in this case would be, can I talk to you? What's the difference?
Oh, I see. I look at it in the sense that the question is whether or not that a person is remaining there by consent. In other words, did the person even perceive that they had the ability to consent, or do they feel that they're compelled to respond there? or to remain there. And so at that point in time, I think we look at it the same way we would for consent for a search of a vehicle. If an if a person is forcibly being detained, even then they can't be consenting to the fact that they're still there in a conversation with an officer. They're forced to be there.
So then your argument is that Mr. Cole's consent to talk to the officer was involuntary. Is that what you're arguing?
We're arguing that consent can't even enter the equation because he's being detained. And the question isn't whether or not somebody consents to the discussion. The question is whether or not the officer has reasonable suspicion for the detention and whether or not they're diligently pursuing a means to affirm or disaffirm the basis of that detention. The officer doesn't get to extend that detention unless he has a reasonable suspicion justifying that continued detention. And that's why it becomes so critical as to whether or not a non-consensual stop was then transitioned into a consensual stop. That's critical because once we get there, the officer no longer has to have reasonable suspicion, no longer has to have a basis for continued detention. The person's remaining there voluntarily. But if the reasonable person would not feel free to leave, they're detained. The burden's on the state, not on the individual, to demonstrate that there was a reasonable suspicion justifying that continued detention. And that is not here. There's nothing, the state doesn't try to suggest that there was any indicia of any drug use or possession that would allow the officer to continue in a detention and in an investigation of those alleged facts, which is why the state has to argue that Mr. Cole's remaining on scene was consensual. But it can only do that if it can demonstrate under the totality of the circumstances that the use of overhead lights, ambiguous language concluding a stop, and standing close, extremely close to a vehicle are not shows of authority. And that's where we think it all fell. So I don't think we even get into the issue of whether or not Mr. Cole consented to staying there because he was in fact detained the entire time based on the show of authority from the officer and under the Idaho statute. So to that extent, he couldn't give consent. He was required to stay. And I don't know if that fully addresses the court's question. I hope it does, at least from our perspective of it. I recognize, just kind of in concluding for my first part here, that suggesting that an officer has to give express or very clear and unambiguous directions to a motorist that the stop is concluded might sound like we're asking for a bright line rule. That's not what we're asking for. What we're suggesting is that the court look at the totality of the circumstances standard, recognize the weight that the use of the overhead lights places on the side of finding in favor of a detention, and recognizing that in order to overcome that weight, you have to have something substantial on the other side to balance that out or make it weigh more in favor of not finding a detention. That's while that's going to typically require something in the neighborhood of clear, unambiguous, express language from an officer, it doesn't necessarily mean that in every circumstance that has to happen, but certainly there have to be other factors that are of a sufficient weight that a reasonable motorist would understand that even though they're statutorily compelled to remain in that location, that they are now relieved of that obligation. I don't think I can think of every possible circumstance where that might happen. I don't suggest this court can think of every possible circumstance where that can happen. The reality is, in most cases, it's probably going to require that the officer use some clear and unambiguous language to overcome the use that their overhead lights are still on, or utilizing some other form of lights at the conclusion of the stop as an indication that the stop is as concluded. That's how it would normally play out. That doesn't mean it's a bright line rule. That just means how it would normally go. And so to that extent, I think what we're asking the court to do fits within the standard. I think it's appropriate. And I think given in this particular case, it was certainly absent, which is why Mr. Cole remained detained the entire time, unconstitutionally detained, and therefore suppression should have been granted. And we'd ask the court to reverse the district court's decision and remand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holdaway. Mr. Wake, argument on behalf of the state.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Let me, I recognize that it wasn't the primary focus of Mr. Holdaway's argument, but just so I don't forget, let me quickly address the second search issue. The district court determined that there was no basis to suppress any evidence recovered in some second search of Mr. Cole's vehicle because there had been no evidence regarding any such search or regarding the evidence allegedly recovered from it. That determination is unchallenged on appeal, and so any error, any argument that it was error is waived on appeal. Mr. Cole didn't raise it at all in his appellant's brief. In his reply brief, he promises to address it, but then doesn't address it there either. And so the very brief argument that we heard today regarding the propriety of suppressing some evidence in a second search is the very first argument that's been made regarding the propriety of doing so. And so the argument is waived on appeal. But even if the court were to address the merits of the district court's determination not to suppress some unidentified evidence recovered in some theoretical second search, the district court didn't err by declining to do so. It was Mr. Cole's burden below to identify the evidence he was seeking to suppress and to show that it was the fruit of some alleged illegality. And again, there was absolutely no evidence below regarding a second search or as to how it was the fruit of some alleged illegality. The only evidence introduced below was Officer Olson's body cam video, which doesn't show some second search, and Officer Olson's testimony, which didn't address any alleged second search. So both because it's the issue is waived as an appellate issue and because the district court correctly determined that it was inappropriate to suppress some evidence recovered in a theoretical second search, the district court, Mr. Cole has not shown that the district court erred by declining to do so. Turning to what I take to be the primary issue, which is the consent search, I think it's so obviously the state does not dispute that Mr. Cole was detained as an initial matter by use of the overhead lights. The question I think is correct, or the issue is whether there was some indication during the course of the stop that the traffic stop had ended and that Mr. Cole was free to leave. And the district court correctly found that there was indication by Officer Olson that the traffic stop had ended and Mr. Cole was free to leave. So first of all, Officer Olson returned Mr. Cole's paperwork, which suggests that the purpose of the stop was complete. Second, Officer Olson and Mr. Cole had a verbal exchange that indicated that the original purpose of the stop was complete. The district court found as a factual matter that the exchange was, quote, dismissive or concluding in nature, signifying the conclusion or completion of the stop or detention. Mr. Cole, I take it, doesn't really dispute that. First of all, he hasn't claimed that any factual findings by the district court were clearly erroneous. But moreover, he acknowledges that the statement conveyed that Mr. Cole, or that the exchange conveyed that Mr. Cole was not, quote, in trouble for speeding or failing to maintain a lane, which was the purpose of the stop. So both because it's an unchallenged factual finding by the district court that this is what this exchange conveyed in the context of the exchange, and because Mr. Cole essentially concedes that it was an exchange that conveyed there was no issue associated with the traffic violations that had initially caused Officer Olson to initiate the stop, the exchange conveyed that there was that the stop was completed at that point. Third, and I think this is most important, and the district court found it most important, and it's almost entirely unaddressed in Mr. Cole's brief. Officer Olson explicitly requested permission from Mr. Cole to ask him some additional questions, and Mr. Cole agreed to remain on scene and answer additional questions. The request whether he could ask Mr. Cole questions clearly conveyed that it was Mr. Cole's choice whether he remained on scene so that Officer Olson could ask him some additional questions. The question, can I ask you some additional questions, makes no sense if Mr. Cole was still being detained. He had no choice whether he remained on scene so that Officer Olson could ask additional questions if he was still being detained. The fact that he was asked, "Can I ask you some additional questions?" conveys that it's his choice. And again, Mr. Cole agreed to stay on scene and answer those questions.
So Mr. Wake, does that then suggest that Mr. Cole's argument revolves around whether his consent was voluntary? And if so, is that an argument that was raised to the district court?
It was not, Your Honor. There's been no argument that when he was asked by Officer Olson, "Can I ask you some additional questions?" that his consent to answer those additional questions was involuntary. The argument he's exclusively made both below and on appeal has been that he was unlawfully detained and the unlawful detention tainted the eventual consent to search his vehicle. Not that the consent to search his vehicle was involuntary, or that his prior agreement to remain on scene and answer additional questions was involuntary. He simply did not make that argument and has not made it on appeal either. So, fourth and finally, as the district court found, Officer Olson never gave Mr. Cole a single word or directive, and the entire interaction when Officer Olson returned to Mr. Cole's vehicle was polite and conversational. There was no display of weapons, no touching of Mr. Cole or his vehicle, and Officer Olson was the only officer on scene. So there are no other indications of a continued detention here. All we have is the continued operation of the lights, and Mr. Cole additionally points to the officer standing close to the vehicle. With respect to Officer Olson's proximity to the vehicle, Mr. Cole argues that it constitutes a factor in favor of finding a detention because he couldn't have immediately pulled away safely with Officer Olson standing where he was. But again, Officer Olson explicitly asked Mr. Cole if he could ask additional questions. Had Mr. Cole not wanted to continue the encounter, had he wanted to leave at that time, he could have simply declined and thereby ended the encounter. That was the obvious route to ending the encounter. It would be, the state certainly agrees that it would be strange for anyone to simply hit the gas and drive away with the officer standing there. But the fact that that would be strange and probably unsafe doesn't indicate a detention, particularly where the officer gave the driver an explicit route to end the encounter by simply saying, "No, I'd rather not answer any questions at this time." In reply, Mr. Cole briefly relies on the proposition that an officer blocking a vehicle's exit constitutes a detention, but that's not what happened here. The officer didn't position his patrol car to block the vehicle. He wasn't standing in front of the vehicle to indicate that Mr. Cole was not permitted to leave. He's simply standing next to the vehicle, talking to Mr. Cole, as anyone would have to do to speak to a driver who's seated in a vehicle. So with respect to the continued operation of the overhead lights, neither the Fourth Amendment nor the statutes on which Mr. Cole relies provide that a traffic stop ends only if an officer explicitly says, "The traffic stop has now ended, you may leave." That's exactly the rule that was rejected in Ohio v. Robinette. And I just note that the quoted language in the reply brief that Mr. Cole has pointed to from the Ohio Supreme Court is from the Ohio Supreme Court that was reversed in Ohio v. Robinette. So any sort of, I know that Mr. Cole has disclaimed a sort of bright line rule here in oral argument, but I think effectively he is asking for the very sort of bright line rule that's been rejected in Ohio v. Robinette. The rule instead is simply, in the totality of the circumstances, would a reasonable person feel that they were free to leave and that the traffic stop had ended? And for the reasons that the district court found, the officer here clearly conveyed that the traffic stop had ended. Mr. Cole was free to leave, and Mr. Cole agreed to stay on scene to answer some additional questions when he was asked if he would do so by Officer Olson. With respect to the, so the district court relied on the safety considerations that are associated with leaving the lights on. Those safety considerations are clearly relevant here. It's obviously true that the officer in the middle of the night parked on the side of the road would have very good reason to leave his overhead lights on, reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with a continued detention, and that a reasonable person would understand that, that there are those safety considerations in favor of leaving the lights on even during this consensual encounter that occurred after the completion of the stop. Let me just check my notes here.
Mr. Wake, can I ask you a couple of questions?
Please.
Was setting aside whether it would have been strange or unsafe to just drive off, was there any finding by the district court that the officer's position in any way prevented Mr. Cole from declining the request to have additional conversation and leave?
There was not, Your Honor. No.
And then the other question I wanted to ask was, is the same that I asked Mr. Holdaway, and is this situation at all analogous, or does the case law that says an officer can ask for consent to search during a valid traffic stop add anything to the analysis in this case?
Your Honor, the state has not argued on appeal that the consent to search the vehicle was provided during the traffic stop. The state has argued that the consent to search the vehicle was given during a consensual encounter. But with respect to the request to answer additional questions, absolutely that case law is relevant. The Mr. Officer Olson's request to ask additional questions came just right at the conclusion of the traffic stop. And this court has held, and the Idaho Supreme Court has held, that those that sort of request for consent to engage in further contact, either a consent to search or a consent to additional questioning, doesn't unlawfully extend the duration of the traffic stop. So that consent to search that request for consent to ask additional questions was perfectly lawful. Mr. Cole has never argued otherwise, and he's never argued, as I noted before, that the request for consent to ask additional questions, his consent to answer additional questions, was involuntary, or that his will was somehow overborne by a show of authority. So the
even
request,
with a second chance to ask that question, I still didn't ask it very well. I am just interested in the consent to ask to answer questions, not the consent to search. But is that any different, asking someone to ask to answer some questions, any different than asking someone if you can search?
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. I think that request, like a request for consent to search, is perfectly lawful in the course of the traffic stop. At the end of the traffic stop, the officer can ask for permission to engage in further consensual discussion. And that's all he did here. And Mr. Cole provided that consent.
Thank you.
Unless the court has additional questions, the state would simply ask that the court affirm the denial of Mr. Cole's motion to suppress.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wake. Madam Clerk, how much time does Mr. Holdaway have for rebuttal?
Ten minutes.
All right, Mr. Holdaway, do you wish to present rebuttal?
I do briefly, Your Honor, just to address a couple of points that were raised in the responding argument. As far as Mr. Cole not challenging or disputing findings of fact as to the conclusiveness of the stop, I take issue with that primarily because the entire appeal has been a challenge of that finding. And I think that's rather clear from the argument that Mr. Cole was never there consensually, that he was there being detained the entire time. It's discussed in our briefing, including in a footnote delineating between findings of fact as to whether or not statements were made versus questions of law as to how those statements are interpreted in the context of the Fourth Amendment and whether somebody is being detained. And that's exactly what we're challenging. Nobody's challenging what the statements were. They're recorded, audibly recorded, and they've been testified to. The question is, what did it mean? And did those statements sufficiently alert Mr. Cole, as it would any other reasonable driver, that he was free to leave? That's a question of law in our mind. The interpretation of that constitutional provision and whether or not these facts applied to that law was a detention or a consensual encounter. That's been the entirety of the appeal. So we absolutely have disputed that from the beginning, that the language used by Officer Olson was not conclusive of the stop, that a reasonable person would not have understood from that language that they were free to disregard all of the other indicia of shows of authority that was being presented to them. The second one is addressing the issue of consent. I think some of the issue is nobody here has challenged, and we're certainly not challenging, that if an officer is otherwise legally engaged in an encounter with a person, that officer can ask for consent to ask questions, that officer can ask for consent to do searches. Everything about the encounter can be consensual. But we don't even get to that question where there's an issue of detention or arrest unless we first find that either the detention has concluded and we're now engaged in the consensual encounter, or that the detention was continuing under appropriate constitutional confinements. Specifically, that the officer had reasonable suspicion for the detention or the continued detention, and that the officer was diligently pursuing a means of investigation to either dispel or confirm those reasonable suspicions. The officer, the state has to demonstrate that those elements are met, or that the stop has concluded in its entirety as to that reasonable suspicion, and that we've now transitioned into an entirely consensual encounter. So I agree with the state that I think the consent law as to consents for searches, things of that nature, would apply as equally to situations of, for instance, asking permission of a person to ask them questions. But I don't believe we get there in this case. We don't even get to that question, because at the time that Mr. Cole was asked whether or not he would answer questions, he was still being detained. And that detention was now being extended beyond its constitutionally permissible bounds, because that detention no longer revolved in any way towards confirming or dispelling or investigating or addressing traffic issues, which was the purpose of the stop. It had switched entirely into an investigation into drugs, something of which the officer has never even attempted to suggest that he had an articulable facts of reasonable suspicion to justify that, which is why the state has to argue that that entirety of that encounter from the moment the officer starts inquiring into drugs was consensual on the part of my client. But it can't be consensual if he was still detained. And that's where we get to the crux of the issue on the overhead lights. But one last point I want to make, just because I don't want it to be thought that there was any attempt whatsoever to mislead the court. In our brief, our reply brief, and we're in referencing that Ohio case, we were very clear and explicitly stated in that brief that that Ohio opinion had been overturned. But we were also very clear that that Ohio opinion had been overturned purely because it created a bright line rule, not because the reasoning was unsound, not because the Ohio court's observation of how a normal motorist might behave was wrong, but rather because the Ohio court took that behavior and turned that into a bright line rule. That's why it was overturned. The reasoning as to how a person would normally respond is still sound. And I think it's echoed not only in this court's previous rulings in dealing with overhead lights, but another case that we talk about out of the Kansas Court of Appeals. And I think it's worth me ending on a recitation just briefly of that holding. It says the district court relied on evidence the defendant placed his hand on the gear shift level in determining the defendant felt free to go. This evidence apparently is the only evidence upon which the court based its decision the defendant felt unrestrained by the officer. We further note that according to Trooper Jimerson, the defendant was told the officer was finished with him at the time the license and registration were returned. Both factors that I think a lot of people would point to suggest that somebody should feel free to leave. But here's what the court ultimately concluded. In contrast, the record undisputedly demonstrates that Trooper Jimerson activated his emergency lights to stop the defendant's vehicle. After returning the defendant's license and registration, the trooper did not move away from the car, but immediately asked the defendant would answer some questions. That's exactly what's happened in this case. During this time, Officer O was standing near the defendant's vehicle. When two officers are standing next to a stopped vehicle, presumably with the emergency lights still activated, no reasonable person would feel free to drive away. Under the circumstances presented in this record, the further detention of the defendant cannot be deemed consensual. That case, and that's on page 14 of our opening brief, that case has remarkable similarities to this case. In that case, the officer asked the driver if he could ask more questions, and the driver affirmed. In fact, that case has even more than this case. Because in the Kansas Court of Appeals case, it suggests that the driver was actually instructed they could leave. And the court still found that due to the proximity of the officers and the continued use of the overhead lights, a reasonable person would not have felt free to leave. We're even more than that here. Here we have, at best, ambiguous language. We have absolutely no interruption, not even a second of interruption, between the officer giving papers back and immediately going into asking for more questions. There's no separation there. The overhead lights remain activated. The officer remains in close proximity. He's not given any kind of indication that the officer has made a decision as to whether or not he's going to do anything about the traffic violations. What he gets is, "All right, Casey," and then Casey making a statement and the officer saying, "You're good," to that statement. The officer never says, "I'm not going to cite you. I'm going to give you a warning. You know, okay, we're not going to worry about it this time." Nothing to suggest to Mr. Cole that the officer was actually done even dealing with the traffic citations. So to that extent, I don't think we even get to the issue of consensual. Just like in the Kansas Court of Appeals, they cannot deem it consensual at that point in time. The evidence, the weight on that scale, saying that it's weighting in favor of finding a detention, is simply too great for those few factors that the state pointed to overcome. And that's where we're at here. The weight on that side with the overhead lights, proximity of the officer, the ambiguous language is simply too much to be overcome by, "Can I ask you some questions?" That's not enough to overcome all of the show of authority that's being exhibited at that same precise moment. For that reason, Mr. Cole was still being detained. That detention was unconstitutional. There could be no consent that would be legally given at that point in time. And for that reason, it needs to be suppressed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The court appreciates the briefing and arguments of counsel in this case. The case is submitted and an opinion will issue in due course. The court will be in recess until the 10:30 oral argument.
Thank you.
Thank you.